This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
In this episode, Tom and Jonathan talk about Jonathan's current favorite GDPR enforcement action involving food service delivery companies in Italy. In this episode, Jonathan Armstrong and myself take a look at some recent developments in whistleblowing in the EU and in the United Kingdom. I think everyone is aware of the EU Whistleblower Directive, which will come into force on December 17, 2021. And we take a deep dive into some of the issues that this new directive has raised and what it will mean for the member countries as well as for the compliance professional. I know you'll enjoy this episode.
Well, I've been looking at some developments in whistleblowing. I think whistleblowing is one of the most dealing with whistleblowers is one of the most challenging bits of the job for compliance officers. And if it's any comfort, it's also a real challenge for external counsel too. Whenever we get involved in looking at whistleblower issues, it's always quite complex. You've obviously got to take the whistleblower's complaints seriously, and you've got to try and look at them dispassionately. That whistleblower, of course, may be identified or may be anonymous or pseudonymous. And it's often a difficult balance, really, between, what weight do you give to the whistleblower's complaints? And this is something that the European Court of Human Rights has been looking at recently with a case from Luxembourg, and the case concerns the LuxLeaks. For those of you who don't remember them, they were a set of leaks in 2014, which were about the, let's just say, alleged practices of a Big Four accounting firm. And there were a number of whistleblowers who were employees of that accounting firm, and they said that the accounting firm had been involved in various practices which didn't stand up to scrutiny. Now, Hallett was the second whistleblower, and I think that's quite important, to come out of this accounting firm. And he took some internal documents from the firm and he gave them to a journalist. As a result of doing that, the accounting firm sacked him. But more than that, he was prosecuted by the Luxembourg authorities in 2016 for a breach of professional secrecy obligations that apply in Luxembourg. The Luxembourg court said that the seriousness of the offence he had committed was greater than the public interest in protecting whistleblowers. He was sentenced to 9 months in jail. That was a suspended sentence. He was fined 1,000 euros, and he had to pay damages to his employer, the accounting firm, although those damages were set only at 1 euro. He appealed to the ECHR, and his appeal has just failed. The court decided that it was a good faith report, but that there was harm to the accounting firm involved. And the ECHR looked at the increasing turnover and increase in headcount of the accounting firm, but they basically said that they weren't going to interfere with the Luxembourg court's findings. It's somewhat confusing because the ECHR is a European court, and this matter was referred to them from the Luxembourg court because it was a matter of European human rights law. The Luxembourg court effectively said that there was no the ECHR said that there was effectively no new information on which they could interfere.
We'll be right back with more from Jonathan Armstrong after a message from our sponsor.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, my colleague Andre Bywater wrote on this case, and it's interesting that one of the court officials connected with us on social media after this report to point out that there was now an appeal that had been lodged, and we're obviously grateful for the court official letting us know that. And the case will now go to the Grand Chamber of the ECHR, who might reach a different decision. But I think it's a somewhat troubling case for whistleblowers. Of course, it comes at the time when the SEC have just announced on September 29th that two whistleblowers had been banned from the SEC system. These are individuals who seem to have made gratuitous nuisance-related referrals to the SEC. They'd been told to stop, but hadn't. But it seems to me that it just increases some of the complexities around whistleblowing, and it's hard not to have sympathy with the whistleblower in this case, who I think seems to have perhaps genuinely thought that he was exposing wrongdoing at a large accounting firm.
So, Jonathan, that this whole discussion brings up several points that I wanted to raise with you. The first one is on the basic Luxembourg decision, is a cost-benefit analysis appropriate when you have a good faith whistleblower complaint, i.e. more harm to the company who have been whistleblowed upon than the potential good?
Well, it seems somewhat strange, doesn't it, to look at whistleblowing in those terms. I think that it was a major factor in the court's reasoning that he was the second whistleblower. These concerns were already in the public domain. If he was the first whistleblower, maybe that equation would look different. But clearly the court were looking at the potential harm to the accounting firm versus the public interest, and the public interest was less with a second complainant who, it seemed, didn't add that much to the complaint from the first whistleblower. So it could have been different if this was a unique whistleblower or Hallett was the first, not the second. But it does seem as if there is this balancing act. Now, of course, that's a really difficult balancing act for a corporation to imply internally. And my worry would be that some within corporations, if this case got more publicity, would think, we can dismiss a whistleblower's allegations because it might do us harm. And there's not a lot of public interest in what we're doing behind closed doors. I think it would be unfortunate if the court's ruling buried legitimate complaints because a corporation somehow thought there was some internal test it could do to look at harm to itself.
Not to sound completely facetious, but every whistleblower potentially brings harm to a corporation. If I could speak a little bit about one of the most recent FCPA enforcement actions involving WPP, there were 7 whistleblower complaints around their India operation. And why didn't WPP just employ this cost-benefit analysis? It's like, well, if we take this seriously, we might have to pay a fine. So
yeah,
our cost is higher than the public benefit. I mean, that's about, I have to say, the most inane analysis for a whistleblower complaint that you could ever come up with. And to have a judicial stamp of approval on this seems to me to be going down a very difficult path for all of us.
I think that's right. And I think these are cases that the appeal, these are considerations that the appeal court will certainly look at. I think it's important to say that it's Europe is not anti-whistleblower in any way. We don't pay bounties as much as you do in the US to whistleblowers. There is a limited bounty program in the UK, but that's by no means widespread across Europe. And it's important to remember that there are new EU whistleblowing rules that are going through the member states at the moment. The deadline is 17th December for EU member states to implement new whistleblowing laws. Some of them already have draft laws on the table, which offer more protection to whistleblowers. The UK has always been different from the rest of Europe with laws to protect whistleblowers. The protections that the EU directive introduces are already largely part of UK law and the specific code as well. And as I say, in some cases, relatively small bounties up to 100,000 sterling can be paid in the UK. So I don't think it's open season on whistleblowers. And I think in some respects, this case has been unhelpful, but in some respects it's against the tide that is supporting whistleblowers in making legitimate concerns public.
And it also brings up another area I wanted to explore with you a little bit, which is the broader question of European Court of Justice vis-a-vis justice as perceived by the member states. And I understand that was one of the reasons that led to your departure from the EU. But if the European Court of Justice says that Luxembourg's, if not preference for money laundering, their preference for abject privacy is not a value that we as the European Court of Justice hold, isn't that really directly antithetical to a core value of its member state, Luxembourg?
Yeah, this is why the European judicial system gets hideously complicated. But there's a difference between the European Court of Human Rights, the ECHR, and the ECJ, the European Court of Justice, aka CJEU. They're two separate courts, if you like. One's looking at the Human Rights Convention, and one's looking at the EU makeup. I'm sort of oversimplifying because it's hideously complicated, and I don't know the full the full weeds of it. So it's two separate systems. The ECHR is looking at human rights, and we've had some very interesting human rights decisions from that court over the years, including cases that have supported whistleblowing. There's a case involving the UK police, for example, and a senior police officer who had concerns about the way in which her police service was run. So I don't think we could necessarily say that either the ECJ or the ECHR were anti-whistleblower. And I don't think we could necessarily say that either of those courts were pro-Luxembourg, the caveat being, of course, that the judges are based in Luxembourg. But I think it is difficult to fit this judgment from the ECHR alongside other judgments that have looked at human rights, particularly freedom of expression and the need to allow people to raise concerns about things that are happening in the in the wider compliance space. So I wonder, and this is a ponder, not a fact, if that's why the court official was very quick to respond to our social media cases and say, let's not go overboard. The case is already subject to appeal. Watch this space.
Well, I think that's a great way to end your segment, Jonathan, because I think we'll certainly be watching this space.
This is Tom Fox again. Thank you for listening to this episode of Life with GDPR. If you'd like more information on Jonathan Armstrong or quarterly compliance, you can check out the links in the show notes. Also, I hope you will check out the latest addition to the Compliance Podcast Network, Design Thinking in Compliance, where with my co-host Karsten Tams, we take a look at this incredibly useful and valuable social engineering tool to make your compliance program more efficient and also more effective. Design Thinking on Compliance. It appears each Wednesday at 8 a.m. on the Compliance Podcast Network. Hope you will join Jonathan and I again next time for another look at compliance, GDPR, data privacy, and data protection on Life with GDPR.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.